to episode 71 of Yins Are Good, the podcast that shares and celebrates all of the good stuff going on out there and all of those good people who are making that good stuff happen. I am your host, Tressa Glover. Thank you so much for tuning in again or for the first time. Welcome. I hope you and yours are doing well. And I hope you're enjoying as we get further into this autumn season, which is my favorite, by the way. I hope you're enjoying it. And I hope, you know, we talk about our gratitude list, right? Of every day, just reminding ourselves of a few things that we're grateful for. And we're also doing our community gratitude project, don't forget. So we're sticking with the prompt that we've been doing. Today, I'm grateful for blank. So if you want to email us here at yinsaregood@gmail.com, let us know how you finished that sentence today. Or also, if you have not yet followed us on Instagram or the Facebook, please do so. We also put those prompts up there as well. We've had several folks already respond on those platforms, which is so awesome. And I thank you so much for doing that. What's coming up today? Well, this episode, we've got some special things going on. So you may or may not be aware of the fact that October is Homeless Children's Awareness Month. You're going to be hearing a conversation, just an incredible conversation that I had with Ardonna AJ Jefferson, who is the executive director of the Homeless Children's Education Fund right here in Pittsburgh. I cannot wait to share that with you. Such important work. And I know I was surprised by some of the statistics and some of general information that AJ was sharing with me regarding homeless children in the Pittsburgh area. Again, it's so important. And I'm honored to be sharing my conversation with her and more about their organization with you all. And name that neighborhood. Don is back. I will tell you that live and in person, I should say. We got something fun. We got something fun coming up. That's all I will say. But I got to update you on a few things here. So firstly, I did attend the Bubble Ball. So as you may recall, just a couple of episodes ago, the ladies from the Pink Pamper, that wonderful organization. And so they have their Bubble Ball, which is their big fundraiser, their annual fundraiser. They again support women with cancer in so many ways, including their Halo Fund. And so we went, my sister Debbie went with me. We had a ball at the Bubble Ball. Okay, that's a Don joke, and I apologize. But we did. It was gorgeous. First of all, you stepped into the ballroom and oh my gosh, that's all I hear now is the word. But you step into the ballroom. It was beautifully decorated and just food, these tables of all different food vendors and bakers and from all over the area. I think they had almost 400 people there. And it was so inspiring, so many speakers and a whole lot of fun too. So I definitely want to give a shout out to them. And listeners, if you didn't have a chance yet to check out the Pink Pamper Fund, I do, or just go to pinkpamper.org, I do encourage you to do so. Also, I have been receiving for several weeks now my crate of veggies from Victory Farms, CSA. You may remember them from several episodes back. Oh my gosh, some of the things that I've gotten. Well, I got some acorn squash, I got delicata, I got beets, I got potatoes, garlic, rosemary, dill. This is me trying to remember all of the things, but so many. And I've already talked about the tomatoes. Oh my goodness, the tomatoes. I know they have a volunteer day coming up October 15th. So this episode will drop a few days before then. So if you're listening in real time, do please check out Victory Farms. And back from episode 31, the Emma Munson Foundation. Denise and Mike Munson, love them. They are dear, dear friends. They have this October, they do their costume, their Halloween costume parties. And this is when you're able to volunteer your time and go and help all of these families who come with their kids to have their choice of all of these Halloween costumes that are donated. And the kids come, and you may remember that I went last year, and just seeing the smiles and the looks on these kids' faces and the true joy for them and for their families as they come and they get to shop. But of course, it's free. But they get to just go on all of these racks and choose whatever costume they would like. And it's such a special time. So please, if you want to check out the Emma Munson Foundation, and they still have slots available, they have several days throughout this month of October where you can volunteer. I will be joining them on October 28th at Light of Life. So, should I give you a minute to jot all that down? And again, thank you so much for tuning in. And, as always, in addition to emailing us your today I am grateful for, you can also please reach out to us if there is something else you want to share with us about a moment that really meant something to you that changed your life, someone you want to thank, someone that you're grateful for, who maybe that's how you're completing that sentence of yours. Or if you have an idea of someone that you would like to be featured on the show that you'd like me to have a chat with, I would love to hear that. So, yinsaregood@gmail.com is where you can reach us. And now let's get to my conversation with AJ from the Homeless Children's Education Fund. Hello.
Hello.
It's so nice to get to talk to you.
It's nice to get to talk to you as well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I cannot wait to learn more about all of this, the work you're doing and how much you're helping so many people in the community.
Yeah, we are doing what I like to call God's work.
Can we just start, can you just tell us a little bit about you and maybe what led you to the Homeless Children's Education Fund, but anything about yourself or your background you want to share with us?
Oh, absolutely. Well, my background is varied. I am originally from Niagara Falls, New York. At least I was born there, and up until the age of about 8 and a half, we lived in Niagara Falls, New York. I was an army brat, so we traveled a great bit. My mom ended up in Pittsburgh after deciding to leave her marriage for just cause. She decided to come to Pittsburgh because she really felt Niagara Falls was just not going to be a good place to raise me and to put me in an environment where there's opportunity for her and I to grow. So she decided to come to Pittsburgh. So pretty close to my 9th birthday, we moved here to Pittsburgh. And so I've been in Pittsburgh from 9 to 25 when I graduated Seton Hill. It's a university now. It was a college when I graduated from Seton Hill, which is in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. About a year after I graduated, I moved to Orlando, Florida, and I was there for 19 years. And just coming back, from a career standpoint, I've stayed pretty much in the nonprofit world my entire career, specifically working with organizations that focused on the positive development of children and empowering women.
And so you came, when did you come back to Pittsburgh?
I came back to Pittsburgh in 2017. So it's been a few years since I've been back.
And is there, speaking of Pittsburgh, is there anything that when you weren't here that you missed the most, or that when you were in other cities and you thought, oh,
Absolutely. What I love about Pittsburgh is first, although I'm not I wasn't born here. All of my developmental years just about were here, all the way up until I graduated college in a couple of years after. So of course I have deep relationships and connections with people here. I went to the Creative and Performing Arts High School, and when there was a Rogers Kappa, the junior high Creative and Performing Arts School, I went there as well. So I have a lot of deep connections that I had not had a chance to just be around for a long, long time. So that's number one. Number two, we all know this, Pittsburgh is a culturally rich city and area. And so, those are some things that I missed as well. Just all of the different cultural companies, dance companies, music companies, everything, entertainment, art. This area is very rich in culture.
Oh, absolutely. And it keeps growing.
It
You know, it
does. It
just
does.
keeps.
It's wonderful.
We're so lucky. We're so lucky here.
And it's affordable. You can go to
Oh.
the theater and it is affordable. So that's what I love about it.
Yes. Oh, well, we're lucky to have you here. So let's talk about, can we abbreviate it as HCEF? I know that, or you
It's
do, but
Homeless Children's Education Fund, but please feel free to call it HCEF. Yes.
or we can alternate at least. I just thought, okay, if I say that every once in a while, maybe just explain, I don't know, the mission or the goals, you know, but what is it for those who aren't familiar?
Absolutely. So it's in the name, Homeless Children's Education Fund. Our primary focus and what we were founded over 20 years ago to actually do in this community is support the educational needs of students, specifically in Allegheny County, but our mission does call for us to expand to Southwest Pennsylvania. Right now, there are 3,000 students who have been identified as homeless in this county. And we believe, as well as others, that that is a drastically under, that number is drastically undercounted. Because we are still experiencing the effects of the pandemic, the way that was traditional way of identifying a student as being homeless, did not work during the height of the pandemic all the way into the middle of it. So we're still, from an identification standpoint, and when I say we, I mean, the school systems in the county are still, trying to reach out to families, reach out to homes, and see, what they're experiencing and if they have housing instability within their family structure. But specifically, we know at HCEF that education is the way to break the cycle of homelessness that our students are experiencing. So we are really focused on getting our students to grade level. Every time a child moves, regardless if that child is homeless or not, every time a child moves, they regress in education 4 to 6 months. So could you imagine being in an unstable housing environment? So you're moving several times. There's no consistency and pattern. We all know that children thrive in consistency and feeling safe. So that gap, that learning gap widens for every single day that that child is not experiencing stability in their home life. So what we do is we come alongside with schools, shelters, students, families to support that particular child's needs and try to offer them, not try, we do, excuse me, offer them tutoring support, whether that's in the school, the shelter, or wherever is convenient for that family. Sometimes our tutoring sessions are done on parks, on church porch or church steps, porches, wherever is convenient. We offer them wraparound services. So we also know, as I alluded to a little while ago, if that child isn't feeling stability, if they don't have a consistent place to call home, if they're in an emergency situation, then they need shelter support, but there aren't any beds available. I had one of my staff call me yesterday and say he had to run out and get air mattresses because there are some students that are sleeping on floors in inadequate housing. So we have to care for the full need of the child. But it's just not us. We have over 200 partners that we work with every single day, that if a child needs things that are outside of what we normally do, we connect them to one of our partner groups. We have a social worker on our team, and that is her responsibility to make sure wraparound support is available to that child. We also, so again, education is the primary focus, and the actual tactical goal is to get the student graduated through high school. Okay. If a student doesn't graduate high school, they're 400 and over 400% more likely to go into adult homelessness. So that is the focus. So in elementary school, K through eight, all the way up to middle school, we're providing tutoring, we're providing school supply support, we're providing wraparound services. When they get into high school, we're providing college and career planning because not only is the goal to get through high school, but the goal is to get to a livable wage. So whatever that student is actually envisioning for their life, they may be envisioning going to a college or university, or they may be envisioning going into career. And so our teen outreach staff are in high schools, sitting down with students, creating college and career plans for these students. Also, we are partnering with local universities and colleges, as well as trade organizations, to provide a pathway to for our students into post-secondary education or career. So we don't stop working with children until they're 24 years of age. And in a lot of cases, we're still supporting even after that.
Oh my gosh. There's so much here. Following up with a couple of these points of what you were saying. So how, I know you mentioned outreach and the social worker that works to with your partners, but as far as identifying, because as you're saying, we're talking about, housing instability. So you have students who are going to school, they're there, but identifying that need and how I'm thinking about how that connection is made.
Absolutely. And it's various ways that we connect with the students. So the number one way a child is identified as homeless, and let me give you the definition of homeless, because I'm pretty sure a lot of your listeners are thinking that children are on the street, which in some cases they may be. But 30% of students who are identified as homeless are living in a shelter. The other 70% are living doubled up in housing. So they're living with grandma or friend, an aunt, an uncle, or whomever. So they're doubled up. They're what we call, the teenage years is what we call couch surfers. So we all had an experience, or at least I did, when I was a teenager in high school, where I had a friend that ran away from home, and they stayed with me and my mom on in the extra room in the bed in the extra room in our house. Well, that teenager was homeless because that was not his house, that was not his permanent address. So, doubled up is another, homeless identifier. Also, the federal government's definition of homeless is any person that doesn't have a consistent adequate nighttime residence, so that they're reporting to the same house every single day that mom, dad, or guardian are listed on the mortgage or the lease agreement, and that it is adequate. It has running water, it has heat, it doesn't have mold or any other adverse, particles growing inside the home, so that it is a livable condition. So that widens the definition of homelessness. So how do we identify students who are homeless? The school is the primary identifier. So if a child, if a school gets the signal or the report that a child is constantly changing their bus stops, where transportation needs to pick them up, or they've moved outside of the school district, that sends up a little signal to whomever is identified as the homeless liaison in each school. Okay. And then that homeless liaison then reaches out to that student and their parents or their guardians to see what is going on. And then a determination is made. Once a determination is made, then they pull us in or organizations similar to us to help support the academic needs of the student, making sure that they are not regressing, or if they have regressed because they have been out of school for so long, that we're helping them catch up with their reading, with their math, whatever it is that they need primarily. The other ways is that we receive referrals from shelters. So we are physically in several shelters throughout the county, but when a new family comes in and whomever is processing that family in the shelter and they determine that a child has academic needs, then we meet those children in the shelter and provide them services. And then in general, we do have a referral form on our website. If you believe, or if you know, not believe, if you know a child is experiencing homelessness or housing instability, go on our website, send us a referral form, and we'll reach out to the school. We'll reach out to the counselor and see what kind of support we need to provide.
And what is your website?
It is homelessfund.org. Again, homelessfund.org. Fund, FUND.
Wonderful. And that'll be in our show notes as well, of course. And so it is this, as you're saying, wraparound services and a, if I'm using the term, if I can use it in this way, but a kind of a holistic approach to it, as far as offering, it's the educational needs, but it's recognizing all that is needed to really help the children thrive.
Yes. So I like to give an example of my own experience. So I would have been a child identified as homeless when I moved here to Pittsburgh, because when my mother decided to leave where we were staying, and again, rightly so, she decided not to go back to her home city. She decided to come here to Pittsburgh, which is a great idea. She had just received her college education, her college degree, and she wanted she and I to flourish in a new city. And so we had to stay with my great aunt. I call her Aunt Ruby. We all call her Aunt Ruby. She's no longer with us, but she welcomed us with open arms. But that my, you know, where I lived as a 9-year-old child was Aunt Ruby's house. It wasn't my house. And so therefore we stayed in one bedroom in that house until my mother could get on her feet, find a great job, and move us out. And I experienced a lot of emotional setbacks because, of course, I'm leaving my home. I'm leaving my home in Niagara Falls with my family. All of my family lived in Niagara Falls, with the exception of my mother and my father. And I'm coming to a new place. I don't want to be here. I want to be back in Niagara Falls. So I didn't speak for a long time when I went to school. I didn't talk. And therefore, at the elementary school that I was enrolled in, great school, they determined that I needed to be in special education courses because I wouldn't speak, I wouldn't try. And it wasn't because I didn't know the work. I knew the work. I came from the New York school system. So it wasn't that I didn't know the work. It's because I was experiencing instability in my life and I didn't feel safe. It wasn't that Aunt Ruby wasn't providing a safe place for me to live, but Aunt Ruby was one person in that entire house. And her husband did not necessarily want me there. So, it was hard for me as a child to navigate all of that. Even to this day, I get a little emotional thinking about that. And that was a good situation. Okay. So we have students that are experiencing much worse situations than that. I had a student I saw some information on not too long ago, and that student came home after their after school job, came home, and everybody left the house. They left that child there alone. Nothing left in the house, nothing left in the apartment. They left the child there to fend for himself. So, I didn't experience that at all. My mother was there, Aunt Ruth was there, Aunt Ruby was there, her children were there helping and supporting me. So there are much worse cases out there. But that is why there's such an impact in the education. Because again, when a child is experiencing instability, they don't feel safe, they don't feel nurtured and cared for. Education, learning is not a priority. In my case, it was not a priority. Me talking was not a priority. Me learning was not a priority because I didn't feel I wanted to be at Niagara Falls. I didn't want to be in Pittsburgh, but that changed around. My mother was very, we talk about education, 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 education. I said my mother got her college degree not too long after we moved, not too long before we moved to Pittsburgh. She had it when we got here. And if it wasn't for her staying focused on getting that degree, and it was hard for her to get it, given some of the circumstances she was going through. She got it, and because she got it, she was able to secure a good job and move us out of someone else's house and into our own house. So I applaud my mother for that. And of course, when that happened, I started to blossom as a student because I'm somewhere with my mother and not other people who may or may not want me around. So again, these are stories like this, similar to this, or much worse than this, that these students are experiencing. And what we want to do is we want to create an environment, whether that environment is at a library, on their porch, or in the park, wherever that is, we want to create an environment that that child feels safe to learn, that that child knows that they're coming and connecting with caring adults who understand what they're going through, and they just want to help them be the best that they can be. I have great opportunities to sit with my staff and watch them work with these students, and I applaud their dedication. I applaud their commitment to these students, and I applaud the way they interact with these students because they care them to success. They care them to success, and that's what every child needs.
Wow, that's that phrase. That's just sitting with me right now. That's really beautiful. And I was going to ask what it might look like. And as you're saying, you've had a chance to sit in on it. So when you have, these staff members of yours and they're working with the kids, does it tend to be small groups? Is it one-on-one? Do they how do they work?
Yeah, so majority is one-on-one, very rarely goes over maybe three or four students at a time because we want to pinpoint the needs of that child. It's an individualized, human-designed learning experience. I have a son, he has autism, and he's on an IEP, he's on an individualized education plan. And although we don't do IEPs for our students, we do provide them individualized supportive services through education and other means. That means we're not treating one child the same as another child because their needs are totally different. And I'm very proud of that, as we start to, again, strategically grow as an organization, we do want to put together plans that are similar in scope to what you would get if your child has a cognitive disability. Again, understanding that these students aren't necessarily identified as having cognitive disabilities, but a learning plan, a performance improvement plan based around their learning and getting them to the level of learning that they need to be, that's equaled out to the grade level that they're in. I had a student, a part of our organization that first, or for some reason, was out of school for 5 years. So, can you imagine the student's chronological age? He was a teenager, but his education had him in elementary school. The level of education he had had him in elementary school. Well, of course, you don't want a teenager in an elementary school environment. You want him to be in the environment that his age and stature equal out to. So my staff wrapped around the student in the specific school district. It was an Allegheny County School District. And we backed him up with deep and consistent learning lessons, multiple tutoring sessions in order to help him progress as rapidly as possible to his grade level.
When you were mentioning as far as where these classes and learning opportunities take place, and when you were saying on porches or in the park or in the shelter, and just that imagery, really the idea of wherever you need, it to be, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And again, our students have inconsistency in their housing. And if we can't reach them in the schools, and there was about 2 years when we couldn't reach them in the schools, right? We're going through a pandemic. So we had to figure out another way to reach these students because we're committed to making sure that they are as successful as they can be, given their situations. So we, became, a program without walls. We went again in the parks, wherever they could meet us, and provided them these learning sessions and these learning environments. We're so committed to our mobile learning program that right now we are in the process of raising money to actually purchase vehicles, because this is happening. The mobile learning program is happening by my staff loading up their SUVs and going out. And we want this to be a robust learning experience for our students. So we're getting ready to purchase vehicles, vans, and have them designed by the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh as educational classrooms on wheels. Yeah, so a classroom on wheels. So we're raising money to support that right now. And I'm looking forward to, we're trying to get Winnie's Wagon. We're calling this project Winnie's Wagon. The vehicles will be called Winnie's Wagon. That's our logo. We call her Winnie. And so we're planning on, having these vehicles ready to go spring of 2023.
Congratulations. That
Thank
is,
you.
I love, and of course, the having the Children's Museum involved.
Yes. And the
Just
dynamic
imagining.
designers.
Yes. I mean, just and just imagining that. And I was thinking too about learning in different places than we're, than when we think of, right, the classroom setting. And I think, I don't know, but I think that has to be beneficial in other ways too, just being in a different type of space.
Yes, when you think about being in a park or even in a library or your church steps or what have you, it's a different environment. It's refreshing, and in a lot of cases, it's safe for the students. It's consistency, or it's inspirational. Can you imagine a teacher walking you through a lesson, and the lesson is environmentally related, and you're sitting in a park and you're experiencing that firsthand?
Yes.
So yeah, absolutely.
And okay. Oh, and so you mentioned that you're raising money now for that in particular. And I was going to ask overall, or if we speak about that specifically, but for listeners who are thinking, if they'd like to get involved, so if there are what ways there might be to do so or to help in some way, or
Absolutely.
what can they do?
We want everyone to hopefully want to get involved with what we do. So the month of October is Homeless Children's Awareness Month. So you will be seeing us hopefully all over the place in the month of October, talking about these 3,000 students, talking about their plight, and putting, real life scenarios into people's minds. So all month of the entire month of October, we're going to be focused on creating awareness around homeless children in our county. But there is a fundraising component to that, because what we do is very people motivated, if you would. We have to have educators on staff. We have to have social workers on staff. There are 3,000 students that are experiencing homelessness, and we're a team right now of 10 people. And if you look at it from an average standpoint, there's only about, only one staff can handle about 80 students. Okay. So we have to grow. We have to expand our programs. And the expansion of the programs come from bringing more educators, more people focused on youth development, as a part of the team, so we can impact the 3,000 number even more so. So, how you can support Homeless Children's Education Fund is going on homelessfund.org and clicking the donate button. But there are also going to be several different events that we're going to be hosting in the month of October to get our community involved. The first one will be a press conference and stand-up demonstration that we are going to be hosting on Tuesday, October the 4th at 10 a.m. in Market Square. There you will see over 100 people converge on Market Square with the faces of with faces representing those of homeless students. We're going to stand in solidarity for 3 minutes to represent the 3,000 homeless students in this area. Mayor Ganey is going to provide words. We have County Councilman Dwight Walton, who's going to be providing words as well. And we're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with our partners that support us in this work as well. But it's all to, you know, bring awareness of what we do every single day and what these students are going through every single day. And to learn more about all of the different events, please go to homelessfund.org.
This is, and again, I just keep thinking, thank you. Mm-hmm. For you and you know, your staff, your team, and all that you're doing, and the ripple effect of it.
Yeah,
you know,
it's good work. It's good work. And although, you know, we see some trying situations, we see some situations that bring tears to our eyes. We know it's good work, and every morning we get up ready to do it. Every morning my team gets up ready and energized to get this done because they care about the students they work with. Yeah.
Are there any moments or smiles on certain kids' faces or anything that kind of stay, you know, that stay with you or that you think about?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A few months ago, we had our HTLA Awards, our Hope Through Learning Awards. This is where we give several thousands of dollars to students who have experienced homelessness or housing instability in their lives, and they've chosen to pursue post-secondary education. So we gather them together and we recognize them for the great students that they are and the even greater students that they will be as they move forward in their young adult lives. And there's this beautiful young lady. Her name is Aaliyah. And just standing there talking to her, knowing her situation, because I read the essay that she submitted in order to be one of our HTLA awardees, knowing the situation that she came out of, but seeing this bright, smiling face of a young person ready to tackle the world, and knowing that our team had a part in her being inspired to do and be what she was telling me she was prepared to do and be was amazing. I had smiles on my face the entire time. We awarded 12 students, but being in that environment was so good. That was energizing for me, hearing what these students are focused on accomplishing in their lives, and that we had a small part in that, that did my heart good. So that's what energizes me every single day.
And now I'm smiling, thinking about
good.
That.
Good, good.
Oh, I thank you so much for this conversation too. It's just, I could just keep talking with you for hours. We're saying, let's just stay on the phone.
Right. Well, I thank you, Tressa, for wanting to bring us on today and educating people a little bit about, you know, the faceless children that you don't hear about, which are our homeless students in this county. It's very important that we all become aware.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello there, Don.
Hi, Tressa.
How are you?
Oh, just fine. Yourself?
I'm good. Welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Mm-hmm. And where are we?
We are back at Orbis as well.
Orbis Cafe. What are you sampling here?
I'm having a mint tea today. I'm having some weather-related sinus issues, so I thought a nice mint tea might help.
It's a good idea. Yeah. It's bad. It's bad out there. I'm having a dirty vanilla chai. What? And ready for this, a citrus crab and corn quiche. The alliteration alone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So here we are, mm-hmm. ready for another rousing round.
More alliteration.
But before we get into it,
Yeah, it's nice that I can be here to defend myself from your jabs at my expense in the last week when I wasn't, when you were reliving episode one.
I didn't think they were jabs. But did you, what were your thoughts when you listened to it? So listeners, if you haven't listened to episode 70 yet, basically we went back and listened to the first ever Name That Neighborhood, and I commented that Don was a little more reserved. And then I said, respectful even. What were your thoughts?
I didn't hear much of a difference other than as it goes on, we do more small talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. And then I also noticed the, well, of course, there weren't any sound effects yet. That was pre-sound effect.
Pre-sound effect. It's true.
Yeah. Now, also, I did catch an error that I made. What? Never.
Uh-huh.
Afterwards, when I said how quickly we had done the statements of fact, and I said that we did five, we only did four.
Yeah, there were four.
There were only four. Uh-huh. So my apologies, listeners, for that. But still,
I am glad that we've gone down from three neighborhoods to two.
Each. Yeah, yeah, agreed. Yeah. but here we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a little fun this. Now, I did mention
some respectful fun, though.
Yeah, a lot of respect. Mm-hmm. A lot of respect here. I mentioned to listeners, you know, a little fun. I did mention to you that we might go out of bounds a little bit here.
Uh-huh.
But, okay, so this, I thought, so the week that this episode drops is the week of Hazel's birthday.
Aw.
Little Hazel,
six.
She's 6 years old. So what if I chose a couple of towns that had Hazel in the name? And
the Hazel, you say.
So here's the thing. And then also because we do have listeners. Well, actually, we have listeners all over the world. But I know we have some listeners in Eastern PA. So the neighborhoods of choice for you today.
Mm-hmm.
Hazelwood.
Hazelwood.
Right here in Pittsburgh, which has been on the show before.
Sure.
But it's back. And Hazelton.
Hazelwood, Hazelton.
In Luzerne County.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I feel great. I feel
good, because that's what we're doing.
Good. Yeah, as if I have a choice.
I know.
Every time you pose it as if I have a choice.
I know, Don, but you're swell for doing it. So, you're going to be really happy.
Because there's...
There are only three statements of fact.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That's awesome.
So give me... Okay, I'm here for you.
Now, do we have to take Hazel to visit these towns?
Yes. I love this idea.
We take pictures of Hazel and Hazelwood. Hazel and Hazelton.
Yes. Okay, anybody out there in the Hazelton area, let us know if we can come and stay with you so we can bring Hazel. Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Number one. This neighborhood is part of the coal region. Named so because it has the largest known deposits of anthracite coal in the world.
Hazelton.
Oh my gosh. You're right.
Yeah?
I know, we don't have sound effects when we're at Orbis.
I know we don't. We just have...
So I just give that pause, that dramatic pause.
Atmospheric sounds.
Atmospheric. It is! Okay, so here's the difference. So as Pittsburghers most likely know, Pittsburgh is known for having a whole lot of coal, and to the point where Mount Washington used to be called Coal Hill, and the coal seam that Pittsburgh is on, is especially back in the day when it all was still there, was the largest coal seam in the world. But we're talking, in that case, bituminous coal.
Which is soft.
Which is what's in Pittsburgh. Right.
Anthracite is the hard coal.
That's right. So over there in eastern PA, it's the largest known deposits in the world. So anthracite. It's cleaner and burns hotter than any other coal available from any other source.
Hmm.
And so it's not just in Hazelton. That coal region I mentioned is usually defined by counties. So you have Luzerne, which is where Hazelton is, Carbon County, Lackawanna County, Northumberland County, and Schuylkill County, which I think I'm pronouncing right.
Schuylkill.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. And I'm proud of myself. Take a moment. No, and so a little
unless we're both wrong.
I know that's true. Please, someone let us know. So this stone coal, sometimes it's referred, is
Stone Coal Steve Austin.
Maybe, you know what? I wonder if that's kind of where he got his name in addition to Stone Cold. Let's send him an email and ask.
That's a strongly worded email.
Yes. So it is hard as granite, but when this was first, especially in this area, you know, discovered, because it was so hard, folks at first didn't know how to burn it, and it couldn't maintain a fire. So there was all of it, but no one could do anything with it. Other than you did have blacksmiths who could use it to fire their small forges, sometimes to fire iron forges, but for the most part, it just sat there. Until February 11th, 1808.
You realize the listeners can't see the hand gestures, Tressa.
I know. Yeah. It's disappointing.
Yeah.
But that's the day, in 1808, when Judge Jesse Fell produced his invention of an iron grate that would maintain a fire using anthracite coal. And so, and chances are there were others who had had similar inventions, but it's just his is the one who, you know, on that date was noted. And it was the first iron grate in the Wyoming Valley to successfully burn anthracite. And there you have it, beginning of a new era.
New era.
Indeed.
Is it safe to say there's a ton of coal in Hazleton? Hazleton?
Yes, it is, Don.
Mm-hmm.
It is safe to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on to number two.
Great.
Number two. This neighborhood is home to Cribs for Kids, a national nonprofit focused on helping every baby sleep safer.
Hazelwood.
Look at you. Two for two.
Yes.
And I was looking at him directly as I said that.
I love that you always leave the dramatic pause because you're expecting a response from me and
nothing.
Nothing.
Never a thing.
Well, okay. Not never.
Just, so, yeah.
I like to talk when you don't expect it.
Mm-hmm. Cribs for Kids. So founded right here in Pittsburgh in 1998. And it was founded as Sudden Infant Death Services of Pennsylvania, or SIDS of PA. But they officially changed their name to Cribs for Kids in 2002 in order to reflect their true mission, as they say, and their growing national presence. And they offer products. They have several programs. They're really a wonderful organization. And I actually hope to have them on the show in the near future.
Yeah.
Yeah. So founded right here. And they got their office right here in Hazelwood.
Nice.
Yeah. Are you ready for number three already?
Why not?
I mean, come on.
Sure.
If you were traveling along the Warrior's Trail, you'd be traipsing through this neighborhood.
Well, I often traipse when I travel.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially on the Warrior Trail.
Sure, I mean, of course.
Through Hazleton?
OMG. It is Hazleton. You do a lot of traipsing, so that's why I thought that was the appropriate verb.
And I am a warrior.
Yes. So, this Warrior's Trail. So, first used by the Delaware and Seneca tribes. And so, the anglicized Warrior's Trail was taken from the terms that they used for it, but that was what they called it in their native languages. It is now present day PA Route 93. And this route connects the Lehigh River in Jim Thorpe to the Susquehanna River in Berwick. Hmm. How about it?
How about it?
There you have it, Don.
There we have it, Tressa. Episode 70 fun.
Hey, oh, I missed that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thank you, Don.
Sure. I'm glad I could be back to defend my own honor.
Okay, yes. I'm glad you could, too.
I think I get a bad rap here, listeners.
You don't.
Mm-hmm.
I love you.
Oh, I love you, too.
Oh, hey, listeners. We also recently celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary. It's true.
It's true. Yeah.
That says it all.
Uh-huh.
Right there.
Yep, we're together.
Until next time, Don.
Yep, 72 Electric Boogaloo.
And on that note, we will be bringing this episode, episode 70 fun, to a close. I am your host, Tressa Glover. Huge thanks to AJ Jefferson of the Homeless Children's Education Fund. Thank you so much for your time and for the work that you and your team are doing. Listeners, please do be sure to check out our show notes for how to find them and lend a hand if you're able. And thank you all for listening and for continuing to grow this Yinz Are Good community. And I wish you a happy and healthy week ahead. And until next time, be safe, be kind, be good. Special thanks to Kristen Wenger, Don DiGiulio, and as always, for our fabulous artwork, Mike Rubino.